This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brandi Zadrozny. My day job is as a reporter for NBC News on the misinformation beat. But this week, I'm filling in for Brooke Gladstone. And for our top story, the 98-page document that we've all been talking about since the night of May 2nd.
Tonight, the nation's highest court confirmed the authenticity of this leaked draft decision of a ruling that would overturn abortion precedent in this country.
Abortion, a perennial juggernaut of American politics, tethered to everything from privacy to religion to money to science. And even when the high court ruled on Roe v. Wade in 1973, there were clear signs in the coverage at the time that the issue wasn't going to go quietly into the night.
The arguments will go on, because perhaps more than any other issue in American life today, the abortion question is loaded with the emotional arguments of life, death, and morality, not the kinds of issues a court can finally settle.
The court of public opinion on abortion has actually been settled for some time. A 2019 Pew survey found that 70% of Americans said they did not want Roe overturned. But as you've watched the news unfold over the past 2 weeks, that public sentiment was not what was being covered. It was all about the political intrigue.
I'm really interested in who the leaker was.
The leak has sparked demonstrations and renewed a focus on who leaked it and if they committed a crime.
Republicans say the leak was meant to intimidate the justices into changing their vote.
This leak from the court is fundamentally destructive to the Supreme Court of the United States, to the rule of law, and to our Constitution, and none of these Democrats care.
And decorum.
The illegal protest, the illegal intimidation of Supreme Court justices, this is reprehensible.
The Democrats, the left, they are the riot party. This is what they do. They are the mob. They don't petition the court. They threaten to or try to burn down the court.
These thugs have no business at the private homes of any government officials, these Supreme Court justices or anyone else.
Why are we arguing about leaks and protests? One answer could be that Republicans aren't doing the thing Democrats and abortion advocates did 49 years ago, celebrating. Here's Planned Parenthood President Alan Guttmacher.
January 22nd, 1973 will stand out as one of the great days for freedom and free choice. This allows a woman free choice as whether or not to remain pregnant. This is extraordinary.
A lot of political sociologists mark Roe's passage as the moment that galvanized the anti-abortion movement. So in 2022, the Republicans didn't celebrate publicly en masse, not even for a day.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating turn of events when you think about how long Republicans have worked for this moment. Decades, really. And on the cusp of their great victory, it's as if they don't want to actually talk about the fact that they have won.
Paul Waldman is an opinion writer for the Plumline blog for The Washington Post, and he explained that Republicans, despite their anticipated victory over abortion rights, are in a tricky position.
Now that they've got their 6 votes and the conservative legal revolution is really underway, the more important it is to define it as apolitical. Because if you don't, then it just looks like, you know, one more partisan institution, and it starts to lose its legitimacy.
And questioning that sanctity of the court, that threatens the court as it exists now.
If the public starts to see the court as just, you know, an arm of the Republican Party that's echoing Republican claims and advancing Republican policy goals, well, then that opens up the question of how you might undertake some serious reforms. Maybe you should institute term limits for justices, which has been suggested. Maybe you want to expand the size of the court. These are things that have been suggested but haven't really gotten very far. But if the court begins to look entirely political, then those things begin to seem much more reasonable and maybe something that we should seriously debate. That's a great threat, because what the conservatives would like is to have everything kind of stay the way it is. They're going to get a lot of things from this court that they want and have wanted for a long time, not just on abortion, but on religious freedom, on how much power the government has to regulate, environmental regulations, on worker rights, all kinds of things. They're going to be receiving a steady stream of policy wins from this court. And so they would like nothing more than to have that train just keep running. And if the court's legitimacy comes into serious question, that's a threat to the operation of that system that they've worked so hard to put in place.
Okay, so this is on the media, so let's talk about the news a little bit. The stories are Democrats are upset about the draft opinion and Republicans are angry about leaks and protests. Are we covering it all as punditry and thus equating picketing justices' sidewalks with a fundamental altering of constitutional rights?
There's an inherent problem in the sort of he said, she said style, which is the default for all news coverage. Almost everyone in the national media would agree that Republicans tend to be just better at unifying around a message. Once they figure out what they want to talk about, everybody on their side is going to echo that idea. And so if Republicans all start expressing their outrage that people protested outside a couple of justices' homes, that's going to be the subject of a significant portion of the news coverage, whether or not it really is all that important or even remotely as important as the fact that millions of women are about to lose their reproductive rights. And the other thing that happens then is that because Democrats are in this constant kind of defensive crouch and want to show that they are the party that believes in norms and civility and propriety. Well, in this case, you saw a piece of legislation introduced in the Senate, which passed unanimously to beef up security for Supreme Court justices. And it's extraordinary when you think about the kinds of constant threats and violence that people who provide abortions have to deal with. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been 10 or 11 doctors and clinic workers who have been murdered in recent decades, bombings of abortion clinics. And we're all acting as though, you know, a few people protesting outside a Supreme Court justice's home is the worst thing that has ever happened to anyone.
Well, but that makes me think, right? I'm thinking about the end game, the Republican end game here. What do Republicans get out of this moment right now?
If you think about what the ideal outcome for Republicans is, it's that Roe v. Wade is overturned. They get the policy victory they've sought for a long time, and there's no political backlash whatsoever, and nothing fundamentally changes about the political situation. And they don't pay any sort of price for getting a policy outcome that is extremely unpopular with the public. And the Democratic base views it as inevitable and not something that you can do anything about, right? That's the ideal outcome for them.
Is there a right way to report on this issue?
Well, there's no perfect way to report on any issue, I think. We get very, very caught up, especially in the Washington media, in whatever is behind the scenes and looks like it's kind of backroom intrigue. And that's why the leak of the draft decision was so enticing to Washington reporters, right? Because you have this very kind of secretive institution and we get this little window into it. And then we can speculate about, you know, was it a conservative clerk who leaked it, or was it a liberal clerk, or could it have been one of the justices themselves? Mm-hmm. And we can go round and around on that. And that plays right into our perception of politics as just this big, fun game that people play. Mm-hmm. But I think that the reporting has to focus on what the actual effects are going to be, how people's lives are going to be impacted. How is America going to change once this decision comes down? That's an eternal problem for the media. You know, we always focus on what's dramatic, what has video and pictures, what involves conflict. That may be the most fundamental bias that the media has, is toward conflict.
And is there a right way to read the news? You know, the media, like you said, likes conflict because people read conflict. And regardless of where you stand, how should media consumers be sorting through all of this?
That's also an eternal problem. It's a lot to ask of people to sort all different kinds of facets of any issue and to seek out the things that are the most fundamental and the most consequential. That's a demand that almost no news consumer can satisfy, right? Well, we only have so many hours in the day, And even those of us who do this for a living can't necessarily learn everything, let alone somebody who has a, you know, a regular job. So that's why it's incumbent upon those of us in the media to give people the best and most complete view of an issue that we can. And so the message to people who are just reading this stuff or watching it on television is to just keep asking, you know, how important is this thing that I'm seeing? If we're arguing about whether people should be protesting outside justices' homes, is that really going to be something that in a week or in a month I'm going to care about? And then to ask yourself the second question, which is, okay, if I'm not, then what about this issue am I going to care about in a month or in a year? And in this case, it's what is America going to look like? What kind of access to abortion are people going to have? Try to focus on the coverage that gets to those more fundamental questions that you are going to care about in a month or a year, and not so much about just what people are shouting about today.
Paul, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Paul Waldman is an opinion writer for the Plumline blog for The Washington Post. Coming up, a taxonomy of moral panics on TikTok. This is On the Media.